Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, I'm Natalia Shkolova-Said. I'm a host of New Books in Ukrainian Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm delighted to speak today with Mateusz Svitlitsky about his book, Next Generation Memory and Ukrainian-Canadian Children's Historical Fiction, The Seeds of Memory, published by Routledge in 2023. Dr. Mateusz Svitlitsky is director of the Center for Young People's Literature and Culture and assistant professor at the Institute of English Studies Department of American Literature and Culture, University of Wroclaw. He is a co-founding member of the Center for Research on Children's and Young Adult Literature, Faculty of Letters, University of Wroclaw. He has held multiple fellowships, including once at the University of Florida's Department of English and the University of Illinois at Chicago. Dr. Svitlitsky specializes in North American and Ukrainian children's and young adult literature and culture, memory, gender, and queer studies, as well as popular culture and film. Hello, Mateusz, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello, thank you, Natalia, for inviting me. It's a great pleasure and a great honor to be here with you.
Well, congratulations on this publication. It's an important work, which I'm sure will make a major contribution to memory studies, not only in terms of Ukrainian context, but in terms of the international context as well. In the introduction, you mentioned that this book is very personal. Would you talk a little bit about the background of this publication?
Thank you for the congratulations. This book is very personal. It's me on the cover, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's me on the cover of the book, and this picture was taken by my grandmother at a local graveyard, which used to be a German graveyard. Now it's Polish, and it's the place where my Ukrainian grandfather is buried. So the seeds of memory, you know, can be understood literally here, you know, in the context of this book's cover, but the metaphorical seeds of memory are the memories which my grandmother left me. So all of these stories, you know, my family stories, my Polish stories, my Ukrainian stories, stories about the Second World War, stories about my family's migrations, you know, migrations from Ukraine to Poland, from Poland to North America. So all of these seeds of memory shaped me as a person, as a scholar, as an individual. And because of these seeds of memory, which my grandmother, my late grandmother, left me, I became interested, you know, in different things, in things connected to history, connected to memory, connected to my own heritage. That's why this book is very personal. Of course, it's not about me. It's not a memoir whatsoever. It's a scholarly book. It's a book about, as you've said, Ukrainian Canadian children's historical fiction, but it's very personal. It's very personal.
And why Seeds of Memory? What does this tell us about memory and how it nuances our understanding of cultural memory?
Cultural memory is like a seed, and we know that seeds can grow, you know, but we also know that in order for seeds to grow, to blossom, to turn into flowers or plants or trees, they need to be cultivated. They need water, seeds need water, they need the sun, you know, they need care. And memory, it's quite similar when it comes to memory. So in order, if we want memory to survive, if we want a cultural memory to be, to become a part of young people's mnemonic repertoires, we need to make sure that this memory is not only planted, these metaphorical seeds of memory are planted, but they're also taken care of.
Yeah, it's such.
So I'm using lots of metaphors.
But it's a very neat metaphor. Memory is like a seed. And yes, indeed, well, it can either blossom or it can be neglected, and then nothing will come out of it. So, and what would be the best way to describe what literature you focus on in your project? Well, as the title mentions Canadian literature and Ukrainian topics, but could we somehow narrow down this very wide range of possible themes?
Yes. So in my book, I study 41 texts published between 1991 and 2021. So, and of course, 1991 is an important date. Yeah, it's important when it comes to Ukraine's history. I'm talking about Ukraine's independence, of course. In 2021, it's right before the war, and also, you know, 30 years of Ukraine's independence. So it's symbolical. When I started looking for these texts, I came up with certain criteria, and I got there more than 60 books, which were either written by Canadian authors of Ukrainian heritage, or books about Ukraine, books about Ukrainians, and then I read them all, and I decided to focus only on those which can be classified as historical fiction. And by historical fiction, I mean books which are about history, but some of these texts are picture books, so multimodal narratives. There is a graphic novel. There are short stories, and but mostly novels, middle grade novels, and also some young adult novels, and books which were originally published in English. I also identified texts about Ukraine, texts for young people about Ukraine or Ukrainians, published in Canada but written by American authors or non-Canadian authors. So I identified them, but I did not include them in my corpus. I also found a few books published in French, but I, as I've said, I focused only on Anglophone literature, but I did find a few books written in French, so French-Canadian books, which of course deserve to be studied separately. I do mention some of them briefly in the end notes, and they're listed in the appendix. I do mention them, but I did not analyze them. They're not part of my corpus.
Yeah, and you also specifically focus on books for children and adult, adult reader, young adult readers.
Young adults.
And in your theoretical part, you also problematize this kind of connection between how historical novels can shape identity, and the specific emphasis is on, of course, children, because that's how children will probably first start developing their understanding not only of themselves but of the environment as well. So would you talk a little bit about your theoretical approach, why you focus on historical novels with some specific emphasis on children and young adult readers?
Mm-hmm. No, that's a very difficult question. I'll try to answer it. As I can. But before I do, there are a few things which I wanted to say. But I will return to the theoretical part. No worries. Reading some of these books, which I found, I realized that many books written by non-Ukrainian authors books written by authors who have absolutely no links to Ukraine, but who but authors who have published a lot about, let's say, the Second World War. Most of these books depict Ukrainians and Eastern Europe in general, but Ukrainians in particular, in a very stereotypical way. And I will not name any of these books. I do name some of them in my book, but I won't. No promotion when it comes to terrible literature. In some of these books, Ukrainian characters are not real characters. They're not, by real, I mean, they're not full characters. They're just foil characters. And these characters are just living stereotypes, let's say. You know, the terrible stereotype of Ukrainians as Nazi collaborators, Ukrainians as those who participated in pogroms and nothing else, you know, so a very stereotypical way, the depiction. So, and then I started looking for other representations of Ukraine and Ukrainians, and I started thinking about these negative depictions and the consequences, you know, such negative depictions may have on young readers. And we're talking about young readers in North America, in Canada, in the US, young readers who know little about, you know, our part of the world. So they know little about Ukraine, they know little about Poland, they know little about what Timothy Snyder termed the bloodlands, you know, they know little about the Second World War. So for such a reader, a popular book recommended by a local librarian or recommended by, you know, a teacher who also may not know better, may be the first and only encounter with the Second World War with Ukraine, you know? And I started thinking about the consequences of such books. So what if that's the only book such a reader comes across, you know, in their life? And because it is possible, yeah. And then I found other books, fantastic books by authors like Marcia Forges-Griffek or Amanda McCrina, who's not Canadian, she's American. And I started thinking about the importance of such books, such counter narratives, let's call them, like counter narratives, books providing young people with different approaches, introducing young people to previously repressed, you know, memories, histories. And then I started reading more about historical fiction per se. And I know that historical fiction is not very, very popular with children, according to some scholars, whom I do mention in my book. But then I started reading reviews, online reviews, posted by children. And I realized that some of these books are very popular with children, that authors like Marcia Forges-Griffek are so popular with regular readers, with everyday readers in North America who know nothing about, as I've said, Ukraine. And I started thinking about the place of such literature, you know, in mnemonic discourses, in literary studies, in literature, and in culture. And that was the moment when I realized that, okay, I may have enough material to really write something powerful and something important. And then, of course, I came across other fantastic books about different topics, because there's only one chapter about the Second World War in my book, but I do mention it in other chapters briefly. Probably one of the, if not the most important chapter in my book, is the one about the Voldemort. It's the fourth chapter, in which I write about North American books about the Great Famine. And until very recently, there were practically no books, I'm talking about mainstream, of course, books for young readers published in North America. Most of them were either self-published or published by independent publisher, which means no promotion, no publicity, no reviews in mainstream press. But it has started to change. Yeah. So in thinking about theory, because I know that your question was about theory, and I started talking about something else, but that's how my brain works. I always have 25 different thoughts at the same time, but in my head, everything makes sense. I hope that it more or less makes sense when I'm saying it out loud.
But you answered the question.
Yeah. So I was really inspired by Anastasia Ulanovich's book, Second Generation Memory. She is a Ukrainian-American scholar based in Florida, the University of Florida. Her book is not about Ukraine. It's not about Ukrainian children's literature, even though she has published about Ukraine and Ukrainian children's literature. But the theory she used and the concept of second generation memory book really inspired me. And of course, I've been inspired by scholars like Marion Hirsch, of course, Michael Rothberg, and his thought-provoking books about multi-directional memory and implicated subjects. Also, I've been really inspired by Canadian and Ukrainian-Canadian historians who have been trying to introduce, or maybe not introduce, popularize, if that's the right word to use, many important and difficult events from Ukraine's and Canada's history to the Canadian mnemonic mainstream. So I'm talking about the internment, the First World War internment. I'm talking about the aforementioned Holodomor, the Second World War. And I've, while working out this book, I knew that I was writing it for North American, maybe not North American, but Anglophone mainstream readers, people specializing in children's literature, students of children's literature, and I wanted to make sure that all of the sources which I was using were approachable. And there are many sources, many Anglophone sources in my book, but I also wanted to make sure to use sources written in other languages, in Ukrainian, in Polish. There are some sources written in I'm mistaken, in German and French. So I wanted to use as many sources as possible. And also, I'm writing about historical fiction. And the word historical is crucial in here. So it was also my task to introduce my implied readers to history. So I really to make sure that my short historical introductions were historically accurate. Mm-hmm. Hence, all of these references to Snyder, Applebaum, and other historians, including Polish and Ukrainian historians.
Yeah.
So memory studies, history, and children's literature studies, and many other things.
Yeah, well, but at the same time, there are a lot of references to culture. Of course, well, we cannot talk about all 41 novels that you analyzed for your project. Yeah. But maybe we could focus a little bit on some specific examples of, for instance, those stereotypes about Ukrainians that you somehow chose to focus while completing this project. There are a lot of sections in which you pay attention to, for instance, Ukrainian food, or for instance, Ukrainian family relations, if we can even put it this way. So maybe we can talk a little bit about some of those examples that for some reason triggered your interest and you are decided to analyze them while working on this book.
So you're probably referring to chapter number 3, which is called Canadian Peasantry and the Survival of the Seeds of Memory, because it's the chapter in which I refer to Easter eggs in the title, and it's and this chapter is about motherhood in and also about food. And you're absolutely right. I refer to various different ways in which national identity can be performed and is performed by some of the characters in these books. And of course, their authors refer to customs and traditions which are important and which may be identified by readers who are members of the Ukrainian diaspora. But some of these customs, traditions, dishes may also be recognized, let's say, by mainstream readers because they're part of Canadian history. I mean, culture. You know, Canadian multicultural society. But also, there are certain traditions. There are certain dishes. There are certain cultural elements which most readers may come across for the first time, which means that these authors can introduce mainstream readers not only to Ukrainian history but also Ukrainian culture. It was very complicated what I've said. I lost my thought, but I hope that makes sense.
You mentioned that it was quite important for you to be, of course, accurate in terms of history. And for this reason,
yes,
you mentioned Snyder and Applebaum and Plohy as well.
Yes, of course.
I'm wondering what kind of political history do these books that you analyzed construct? Because, well, after 2022, well, unfortunately, in spite of the fact that Ukraine was independent for more than 30 years by the time when the Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine took place, I wouldn't say that in some popular collective memory, if I can even put it this way, international, right, in terms of the international understanding, Ukraine was quite visible and Ukraine was quite well-known. After reading your book, I got this kind of understanding that these books that you are analyzing actually help understand Ukraine as a political and cultural unit that existed actually before 1991. And that's something that was repeated again and again after 2022, that Ukraine is kind of a young state and it's quite struggling with some political behavior and political representation on the international arena. So my question is about whether these books can somehow construct this understanding of Ukraine that actually had a very, very long history before 1991. Yes. And how does it work in terms of these historical fiction books?
Yes. Thank you for this question. Thank you. I really appreciate it. By February 2022, my book is practically done.
Mm-hmm.
I had an early draft of the book that I kept on reworking it. And the Russia's war, so the Russo-Ukrainian war, convinced me that introducing some changes to my book was the right thing. That's why I decided to refer to the ongoing Russo-Ukrainian war in the fourth chapter, and also the conclusion, because I think that is important. It was the right thing to do. And just showing people that what Russia's been doing, what Putin's been doing, you know, it's not right, it's not historically accurate, it's outrageous. But returning to the books, yes, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. And these books can introduce or have the potential to introduce young people to Ukraine's history and to show young people that Ukraine has a history, has a rich history, has a rich culture. In the first chapter, I write about Cossacks. I write about different things which most young, maybe not young North Americans, but most North Americans are aware of, but they don't really know that these things are Ukrainian, you know, when it comes to these books about the Second World War. Authors like Marcia Skripek, these authors, I like the fact that their Ukrainian characters are Ukrainian, that they're not Russian, they're not Polish, they're not, I don't know, German, they're Ukrainian, and they highlight the differences between the Ukrainian language and the Russian language and the Polish language. I think that these little things do matter. And you said something about popularity. Yes, I think that for many years, until quite recently, many people, and of course, I know that this is a generalization and an oversimplification, but many people in North America had no clue, you know, that Ukraine is such an old country with old, with customs, traditions, with the rich history. But on the other hand, we have books like Make and Bounce for Hitler by Marcia Skripek, which was originally published in 2012. And it has been one of the most popular books about the Second World War for middle grade readers in North America. It's been a bestseller for years. So on the one hand, we have adults who know little about Ukraine as a country. And we have these kids, we have children who just know these things because they've already read all of these books by Marcia Skripek and many other authors. Yeah. So hence, I believe that these books may not only introduce young readers to Ukraine's history, but also help them understand Ukraine for what it is now. So it's easy to, and it has been done a lot in North America. I've noticed that it's really easy to dismiss Ukraine as a young country, as a country with no traditions, blah, blah, blah. We know that it's not true, but it's what has been done, what is still being done by certain individuals, by certain groups, unfortunately. But a young person reading such books may understand that, oh, there was a genocidal famine in Ukraine. Oh, Ukrainians were killed by the Nazis. They were killed by the Soviets. Ukrainians had to survive all of these atrocities. And Ukrainian immigration to Canada started in the late 19th century. So if Ukrainian immigration Ukrainian immigration to Canada started at the more than 120 years or 30 years ago, it means that in 1890s, there must have been Ukraine. You know what I mean? So because if not, it makes no sense. So at least Ukrainian settlers came here in 1896 from Ukraine and they identified as Ukrainians. It means that what Putin's been saying about Ukraine being an invention, being a new country with no history, it's not true. And you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand it.
Yeah,
it's a very good point, in fact. It's a very good point, yes. I'm wondering if any of these novels that you analyzed are translated into Ukrainian, or if they're not, should they be translated? Because at this point, I'm thinking that these novels can also be a way for Ukrainians to better even understand themselves through this outside perspective.
Yes, thank you for this question. Marcia Fortune Scripps' Stolen Child, published in the US as Stolen Girl, has just been published in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. It's been translated by Yulia Dubka, and I've already read the Ukrainian translation, and I can recommend it. It's really good, and the book was originally published in 2010, and it is a novel about a young Ukrainian girl who comes to Canada after the Second World War, and she does not remember her childhood, and I don't want to spoil it to any of the listeners, but it's a story about a Lebensborn girl, so a girl who was stolen from her Ukrainian family by the Nazis, and she was brainwashed to believe that she was a Nazi, but who was later she was later saved by her new Nazi family's slave worker, a Ukrainian Ausarbeiter. And only in Canada, Nadia, the protagonist, she starts to get these flashbacks, because until that moment, she repressed all of her memories of life in Ukraine, life as a Nazi girl, because she was four or five, you know. And in the book, if I'm not mistaken, she's 12. Yeah, so she kept on repressing her her memories because she stayed at a DP camp for a few years with Borussia. But so when she comes to Canada, she starts getting these flashbacks, and she understands who she is. And I think that it's fantastic that this book has just been published in Ukrainian, because unfortunately it's timely. And of course, I'm talking about these all of these Ukrainian children who have been stolen by Russians, who've been brainwashed, and who are still being brainwashed. And unfortunately, it's a very timely book. And I think that many Ukrainian readers, and I'm talking about children, but not only children, may not be familiar with this program, may not be familiar with Lebensborn program. Many Ukrainian readers may not be familiar with Ausarbeiters, with slave workers, who were Slavs. I know that two other books, because Stolen Child is the first book in Marcia Skripek's first Second World War trilogy. I know that the second book and the third book will also be translated and published in Ukraine, and I'm thrilled, because Skripek's books are historically accurate, but they're also well written, and they're suitable for a young reader, really. So she introduces her readers to history without, and I'll use this word loosely, without traumatizing the child, you know. So she introduces difficult topics, but she leaves certain things unsaid, mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think is important when it comes to children's books. Unfortunately, Marcia Skripek's two other books, which have been translated into Ukrainian, have only been published in Canada. Yes, so Enough, which is a picture book about the Voldemort, and Silver Threads, which is a picture book about the First World War internment. So I do have these books in Ukrainian. The translation is also fantastic, but unfortunately, these two books were only published in Canada. So I hope that they will eventually be published in Ukraine. I also hope that Skripek's latest book, Winter Coat, which is a middle grade novel about the Voldemort, will be published, because this topic, unfortunately, is still not really present in Ukrainian children's young adult literature. And there are so many fantastic Canadian books about this difficult history. And as I've said, a great strength of these books is the fact that they're child appropriate. Mm-hmm. So the certain things are not there. So it's possible to introduce a child to these books. And there are many other books which I would love to be, I would love to see translated into Ukrainian. And I also think that books by authors who identify as Ukrainian Canadian, books by authors whose parents, grandparents came from Ukraine and really do identify as Ukrainian. And this is something that Lisa Greco, another fantastic Ukrainian Canadian scholar and writer, writes about in her book Kalina Saw, that you don't even have to be, you don't have to speak Ukrainian to feel Ukrainian. And I think that when it comes to third, fourth, fifth generation Ukrainian Canadians, some of these people who identify as Ukrainian, they don't even know the language. So it's fantastic that we have all of these books available in English, which is connected to what I was about to say. I think that these books belong in one way or another to the Ukrainian literary discourse, this main literary discourse. It's also part of, I think that these books are also part of the Ukrainian culture. It's just diaspora literature. It's but it's still, I think, a part of Ukrainian culture and tradition. So if I would love to see all of these books in the Ukrainian translation, especially my biggest Stolen Child is one of my personal favorites, but I would also love someone to translate Gloria Kopchenko-Frolik's Anna Varikha, which is a fantastic book. And unfortunately, the author died in the early 1990s, and the book was published in 1992. It's out of print, unfortunately. So I would love it to be reprinted in English and also translated into Ukrainian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for covering that issue of potential traumatizing effects of some of the difficult past episodes that these books include, because it's really important to know the history, right? To know what happened, but on the yes. other hand, to also learn how to appreciate the country and its culture and its history without seeing it as a permanent victim. Yes. And it really asks for some mastery, I would say, to approach those topics. So thank you for covering that that issue. I wanted to ask if you could somehow summarize what place Ukrainian theme books have in a broader range of Canadian literature. If it's some sort of do Ukrainian theme books have their own niche, so to speak, without being exoticized, for instance, but standing as something that is visible, I would say.
Yes, thank you for another fantastic question. In the introduction, I write about Ukrainian Canadians, and Ukrainian Canadians have always been an important minority in Canada, which means that there is Ukrainian Canadian literature, not only children's literature, but also literature for adult readers. There are literary prizes. There is the Kobzar Award, which is an award given to Ukrainian Canadian authors, and I think that when it comes to some of these books, I would say that there are two categories of Ukrainian Canadian books. So books which are mainstream appropriate while being very Ukrainian, and there are so books like Skripix books or some other books which I also write in my book, and there are books which are very ethnic, which portray Ukraine as this ethnic land, let's say, where people only sing and dance and eat vareniki and it's not a very realistic depiction of Ukraine. But most of these books are issued by are either self-published or are issued by independent publishers, and they're usually embraced by older representatives of the diaspora, but they rarely make it to the mainstream. And that's just my observation. But there are books which are, on the one hand, very Ukrainian, but they're also very Canadian. They have this mainstream potential. And I think that these books are the most important ones because of the number of their potential readers. You know, they're of great importance, great significance. When it comes to Ukrainian Canadian literature for adults, Jenny Skolik-Kiefer is a fantastic author of who's Ukrainian Canadian. Lena Kostash is another fantastic author journalist. So there are many. So I've just named two of my personal favorites. So for sure. And I think that in the last few years there have been more the interest in Ukraine has grown significantly when it comes to mainstream publishers. There are also many American authors whose books are available in Canada who write about Ukraine and Ukrainian history, like Catherine Marsh, who's recently published the last year, is a middle grade book about the Holodomor, and she's a best-selling author. There's Amanda McCrina, who has written about the Second World War, and her two fantastic young adult books. I have them here because I'm currently working on an article about them. They're set in Lviv. So fantastic books. When it comes to mainstream literature, there's Erin Litikin, who is American, but she's Ukrainian-American. Her first book was about the Holodomor. Her second book, The Lost Daughters of Ukraine, is about the Second World War. And I can especially recommend this one. It's fantastic. And what I appreciate about Makrina and Litikin is that they write about the very difficult Polish-Ukrainian relations during the Second World War in such a nuanced but also classy way. And it's really difficult to write about history in which most participants do not fit to these narrowly defined categories of the victim and the perpetrator, where people just want to survive, yeah? And especially it's difficult to do that in books which are directed at younger readers, and these authors can do that. So they're Americans, but their books are also available in Canada. So if I were to recommend some mainstream titles, I can for sure recommend them.
Thank you. Thank you, Mateusz. And I hope many of those books that you mentioned today will be translated into Ukrainian too. Yes. I do believe that it's a very important thing to have for international dialogues, for cultural dialogues as well. Well, thank you so much for this conversation today. And again, congratulations on this very important publication, which I, as I said, see as a major contribution not only to memory studies in terms of Ukraine, but in memory studies in terms of international context as well. I do believe that the books that you mentioned today really helped not only learn about the country and its people and its culture, but also learn something about ourselves and also construct our identity as well through these very intimate communication with books. Thank you so much, Mateusz.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I also, the last thing that I want to add is that I hope that the publishers of these books will also become interested in English translations of Ukrainian books. That's something that I really hope to see, more Ukrainian books available in English.
Thank you. Thank you, Mateusz. Today I spoke with Mateusz Sekritsky about his book Next Generation Memory and Ukrainian-Canadian Children's Historical Fiction, The Seeds of Memory, published by Routledge in 2023. Thank you for listening to New Books in Ukrainian Studies, the podcast channel on the New Books Network.